All right, it's always pleasant to be here, so thank you for allowing me to come. Grisha and Eberhard have asked me to give a tutorial which implies or suggests that you need to be taught. Maybe it's probably true because we all need that, but I probably need to be taught more than you do. However, I did my best to collect a couple of experiments we've made around the idea of mixing to present them in a kind of organized fashion. So in order to illustrate or to motivate the subject, imagine that you're spending some vacations around here, let's say in Santa Barbara, for instance. Then you have a couple of weeks of vacations. And then by sad chance, a problem arises in a nuclear plant in the archipelago of Japan. The question you ask naturally is, am I in danger? Of course, there is a plume of pollutant which emanates from the damaged reactors, and you want to know if you will receive some of the subsequent radioactivity. So this is exactly the problem which has been investigated by this service d'aéronomie. So they have a service d'aéronomie in Belgium. And they have accounted for the wind, the existing wind at the time of the problem, and they have advected in using a numerical framework, which I will of course not describe. They have advected a plume of pollutant in order to see if the west coast of America was in danger or not. So this is one of their simulation, and there is another one with a slightly different mixing scheme, which shows a quite different output. And in that case, I mean, the danger is potential for the West Coast. And in fact, they had done this simulation first, and then since people were scared, they redid another simulation, which was the one I've shown you before, which indeed shows that there is no problem. Anyway, so that was...
So while you're at it, have you compared them with the Germans? The Germans have done it too, right? So I think each country has its own...
You can average over different countries. You make
it
very scientific.
From what I understood, the difference between the two runs is that in the first one, they account for precipitations. So they account for rain, which drains, in some sense, the pollutants from the plume, so that when the plume arrives at the west coast, its concentration in potential dangerous particles is much less.
So you're saying the lines would be the same, it's just the colors are different?
I think so. The concentration decreases because there has been a lost term on the way. But this problem poses exactly the kind of questions I will be discussing in this tutorial. What is, given a point, a release point at a given location in the flow, what is the probability at another location in the flow to have a given concentration level in passive scalar, anything? All right. So in order to enter into the problem, let's consider a mixture. So this is a mixture, a passive dye, which has been stirred in a two-dimensional setup. And what do we see? Well, we see the formation of elongated sheets, or lamella, these objects. Clearly, all the lamella have not undergone the same history in the medium, because some are strongly stretched and nearly fading away in the medium, while some others still bear the initial black concentration. Initially, this was a spot of black ink into a diluting white medium. And we also see something else, we see that these elementary objects, these sheets, which were formed in the previous simulation, are at some places in the medium interacting with each other, they are merging with each other, in order to form new concentration levels resulting precisely from the merging of the sheets. So that a possible way of describing a mixture will be to understand the individual trajectories. In other words, these sheets have different histories in the medium, obviously, and from the multiplicity of the histories in the medium results a distribution of concentration. We will see that there is an interrelation between the concentration in a sheet and the rate and the it has been stretched or elongated. So from the distribution of the stretching histories will result a distribution of concentration. And we will have also to consider the possible interaction of these objects in the medium to understand the composition rule, which gives rise to another kind of concentration distribution, as we'll see. All right, so that's the program. So I'm always I was in fact giving this kind of lecture in front of a community which was not like you physicists, but they were people from the ergodic theory, and it's not always clear in their mind that stirring does not mean mixing. So this is an example of stirring, exactly the same kind of process I've shown before, except that the medium remains bimodal, always black and white. There is no mixing in this problem. So
I always say, here, don't mix. Exactly. But clearly, two different processes.
Exactly. And on top of that, in English, they have two words, two different words. We don't have these two different words in French, for instance. But in English, it's perfectly clear that stirring is not mixing. There is no equivalent. So of course, mixing is coupled to stirring. This goes without saying, and we will go along these lines. But stirring in itself is not mixing. So that's the first point. So this is another illustration that here we have mixing because there is an interplay between the fact that the object has been rearranged in the medium and the molecular diffusion. So mixing clearly incorporates the influence of irreversible molecular diffusion effects. That's clear. Also, what is interesting and important in the problem of mixing is not so much the final state. The final state is trivial. If you put, again, a blob of dye here in a closed medium and if you stir, in the end, if you wait long enough, the medium will be café au lait, as we say in French. In between, it will be uniformly gray. So this is not interesting. What is interesting is the route. The transient state between the obvious initial stage and the obvious final stage. So we want to describe the transient state and the kinetics. How fast do we go from one extreme to the other? Again, this is obvious, but every obvious thing needs to be recalled, probably. It's a tutorial, I remind you. And I'm showing this also because the Russian community is quite large here, so it's a pleasure to acknowledge Arnold, who was one of the first to address in a mathematical way the problem of mixing. But again, Arnold was interested in the final stage. He was considering iteration, maps of the plane on the plane, and he was classifying the maps according to their ability to fill the plane in a uniform fashion or not. He was not interested at all in the transient state. So we will be interested in the transient state. So let's consider a mixture and a stirring protocol, which is very simple, one of the most simple one can think of. It's a blob of dye which is stirred by a punctual vortex. So it's an experiment. This time we are sitting in it's a two-dimensional thing. We're producing a punctal vortex by flapping a plate into water, into a fluid.
It's lower Reynolds number.
It's the Reynolds number is in that case the ratio of the circulation of the vortex to the kinematic viscosity. It's a very high Reynolds number, in fact. Very high Reynolds number.
But it's stable.
It's stable. Uh-huh. So it's a good question. It's stable because we are considering here a slice through a medium which is very tall, and the vortex, which has been produced by flapping a plate, is in fact very, very, very long. It destabilizes, it does destabilize, in fact quite fast, from the extremities, because the edge effects are crucial. The instability is quite fast, but by the time the disturbances reach the median plane in the setup, we have been able to do this experiment where everything is undisturbed. So this is a high Reynolds number flow. However, it remains close to the very simple description in terms of Navier-Stokes equation. Which is, by the way, an exact solution of the one of the rare exact solution of the Navier-Stokes equation. So you have a viscous core which diffuses at a rate prescribed by the kinematic viscosity precisely of the fluid, and there is a given circulation which is set by the strength at which the flap is made in the medium. So one can check that. So this is a measurement of the displacement field around the vortex in the plane we have seen in the pictures. So this is a famous Lambozine vortex with a 1 over r azimuthal velocity in the far field and a viscous core which increases in a diffusive fashion. It's something which is at the same time well known and well controlled. So let us come back on what we see here. Precisely the stirring field, the stirring strength, decays like 1 over r as a function of the distance to the center of the vortex, so that fluid particles which were initially far from the center of the vortex are not disturbed much, and they still bear, as we can see here, for instance, the initial concentration of the blob. However, fluid particles which were initially closer to the center of the vortex are strongly elongated at a given instant of time, so that their concentration has decayed, and for some of them the concentration is so slow that the resulting lamella is vanishing in the diluting medium. In other words, there is a distribution of concentration even in this very simple protocol, resulting precisely from the different elongation intensities the different fluid particles have seen in the medium according to their initial position. So even if the protocol is very simple, there is a distribution of concentration. This is obvious. And again, this can be computed in a nearly exact fashion. So this is the flow kinematics. The azimuthal velocity decays like 1 over r, provided we are far enough from the viscous core. And a blob is stretched, is elongated. And since the blob is elongated, one can compute the rate at which its overall length, the length of the spiral, will increase in time. It increases linearly in time at large time. And consequently, since this is a two-dimensional setup, the transverse thickness will decrease like 1 over t at large time. All right. And this also, of course, depends on the particular location, depending as a function of the center of the vortex, because as I said, the stirring strength is itself a function of the distance from the center of the vortex. So having this kinematics in mind, it's very easy to plug the diffusion problem on it. The diffusion equation written on a moving frame, since we know the kinematics of the flow, and in particular we know the rate at which this lamella will decrease in time, it's easy to transform it in a nearly exact fashion, I repeat, into a pure diffusion equation. This is well known for a long time. A diffusion equation which is written in the native, in the original coordinates of the problem, the original coordinates being to measure the spatial distances in terms of this striation thickness, this S, which is given by the kinematics, and measuring time in terms of the current diffusion time, based on this transverse thickness. So it's as soon as, in other words, as soon as you have the kinematics, as soon as you have the evolution of this S of t, you have the solution for the distribution of concentration at any time.
This is Lagrangian, or it's
This is Lagrangian. Yeah, exactly. This is following, absolutely, see, Lagrangian coordinates is following the blob in its Lagrangian history, absolutely. Which is particularly simple to do here.
So does diffusion take place on a curve, so to speak, manifold or something like
yes,
that?
Yes. So there is. This is, as I said, this is nearly exact. This is not absolutely exact because we are going from here to there. We are neglecting this term. We are neglecting diffusion in the direction of the blob itself, of the elongated blob itself. In other words, we're explicitly saying that concentration gradients, and this is, as you can see, by far legitimate, concentration gradients essentially concentrate in the direction perpendicular to this lamella and do not exist along the lamella itself. This is what we're saying, and this is where the exactness is lost.
So the concentration gradient factor and then the stretching, they are at right angles to each other.
Yes, exactly. Very rapidly. So again, this can be shown. The concentration gradient aligns in the direction of maximal compression of the blob. This is very fast. And this is what we are seeing here. And this is how this XY frame is chosen. All right, so since we have a diffusion equation, it's straightforward because we know the solutions to the diffusion equation. So starting with a blob, for instance, which has a top hat profile, we know that the subsequent concentration profile is Gaussian or difference of error functions, which converge to a Gaussian at larger times. And then there is a characteristic time above which the initial concentration, so the black, is lost and is progressively diluted into gray levels. So this concentration, this characteristic time, is called mixing time. It is proportional to the Peclet number, so the circulation of the vortex divided by the diffusion coefficient of the dye to the power 1/3. So this is typical of this kind of flows which increase the material lengths proportionally to time. So this power 1/3 is like that, and it also is. It depends on the particular location along the spiral. And for times which are larger than this mixing time, we have essentially a Gaussian transverse concentration profile, which decays in amplitude. This is the result of mixing. So it's easy to check from the experiment that the expected laws are more or less correct. For instance, if we, at a given instant of time, we measure the concentration along the spiral, when we are far from the center of the vortex, the concentration is still one. And when we consider locations which get nearer and nearer from the center of the vortex, the concentration decays. It is expected to decay according to the line here from the theory I've just shown, and the dots are the measurements. At a fixed location along the spiral for different instant of time now, the concentration is initially one and then decays, and it decays according to this 3/2 power. We will see that 3/2 can be understood in terms of elementary arguments. And again, this is the expectation from the from the Fourier equations written on this moving frame. All right, since we have the spatial concentration profile, we can go on and estimate or compute the probability density function of the concentration itself. So we've seen that after the mixing time, the transverse concentration profile, spatial concentration profile, is this kind of Gaussian, which in the space of the probability density function results in a U-shape distribution. You spend a lot of time in the tails of the Gaussian explaining why you have large values here. You spend not much time around the inflection point so that the corresponding concentration levels are weakly represented, and then you spend a lot of time around the maximum explaining why you have a kind of a delta or divergence at the maximal concentration. So this is the probability density function of the concentration associated to a Gaussian profile. Now we have a collection, this spiral is a collection of Gaussian concentration profiles with maximum concentration, as we've seen, which depend on the particular location around the spiral, so that the overall distribution will be simply an average, a weighted average of these U-shaped distributions, given the weight being given by the R dependence of this maximal concentration. And of course it works. It produces this kind of funny distributions which present a cusp and a kind of singularity, but which all result from the way the concentration levels have been built from an assisted...
True cusp.
It's a true cusp, yeah. Exactly. It's a discontinuity.
Uh-huh. And it moves towards the center.
Exactly, right? Yeah. Exactly. So you can play exactly the same game. This time, depositing the blob at regions which are close, including regions which are close to the center of the vortex, that is in the core, the viscous core, which is rotating as a solid body. And since it rotates as a solid body, it does not mix. There is no velocity gradients. It is just transport it angularly with no mixing, so that the spatial concentration pattern is now, you go from 1 to 1 in the center, 1 because the fluid has not been much stirred, the stirring strength decays like 1 over R. Here it is not stirred because this is a viscous core, and in between we have the phenomenon we have just described, strong elongations mean weak concentration level, so that the spatial concentration profile has a saddle point. You go from 1 to 1 and from maximum here to 0 in the diluting fluid, and from this saddle point results a singularity in the probability density function. This is called a Van Hove singularity. Not bad. So with scalars you are able to produce singular PDFs. It's a detail, but it's just to show that from the Fourier equations written in the appropriate frame, you're able to predict the statistics of the scalar. That was the first part of the tutorial. All right, so what have we learned? We have learned that if indeed we write the Fourier equations in the appropriate frame, there is a mixing time. There is a mixing time which... So what is the physics of the mixing time? It's simply that we have two competing phenomena in this problem. We have compression, this S of T, you remember, the thickness of this thing. We have compression due to the kinematics, and we have diffusive broadening due to diffusion. When the two rates equilibrate, this defines a transition time above which diffusion wins and smears everything out. So considering different laws for the kinematics, for instance power law decrease or exponential decrease, if we are considering flows which increase material lines exponentially in time, then we have different expressions for the mixing time, which all show that in the limit of large Peclet number, so the Peclet number is precisely the ratio of the elongational strength to the diffusional broadening, So large Peclet number means that diffusion is subdominant and that the phenomenon which is more important or more efficient at short time is the stretching. This mixing time will simply be inversely proportional to the elongation rate. In other words, the time it takes for diffusion to erase the concentration differences is essentially given by the stirring strength. So this is the underlying physics.
Question. Can you comment, what is the role of this cylindrical geometry of the vortex? Can we just have a plane shear?
Exactly. Absolutely. The role of the axisymmetry is just that the elongation rate depends on the radial location. But if you had just a simple shear in a quet flow, for instance, you would have a single concentration level, because there would be only one possible history for the stretching, but the physics would be exactly the same.
Okay, so then this PDF of concentration.
The PDF of concentration in that case would be a Dirac delta, and the fact that we have had this cusp, this broad distribution, result from the fact that the elongation rate were are dependent in the vortex.
Okay, so then geometry comes into play only in this total distribution of...
Exactly, absolutely.
Have you tried to calculate, to do the same calculations with two vortices?
We will see when there are two. We are progressing to this. How does the maximal concentration in these stretchy decays in time? So it's very easy. It is by mass conservation. So after the mixing time, the transverse width of this stretch lamella increased by diffusion, so square root of dt. 1 over s of t is the thickness, so that the maximal concentration should be such that this this function should be constant, and thus for a rate of elongation which is linear in time, as the one in the vortex, for instance, the maximal concentration decays like t to the minus 3/2. We have seen previously that we had t to the minus 3/2. If now there are two directions of elongation, for instance, it's t to the minus 5/2. And if it were exponential, it would be an exponential in time of time. All right. So it is not that clear, but we can with this model in mind, we can approach now objects which are which look like more complicated objects, like this turbulent plume. We are now sitting in a turbulent medium. We are releasing from a pipe here, a colored dye, and the question is, this is Japan, we are in Santa Barbara here, so the question is, what is the probability density function of the concentration at a given fixed location here? So again, there is a distribution of histories, of stretching histories, which will induce the concentration distribution. So it's not difficult. Again, we can transport what we have learned in this particular problem. We know that after the mixing time, the concentration essentially decays, like for instance a power law in that case. It is constant and equal to 1 up to the mixing time, and then after the mixing time it decays like that. We know that there is a distribution of elongation. I will not describe this too much because that would be a little bit long, but it is easy from the examination of the rate of increase of the contour of material lines in this flow to infer the distribution of elongations in the flow. There are many weak elongations and a fat tail describing large elongations, so that in the end, objects which have been weakly elongated at a given instant of time will have a mixing time which is larger than, for instance, the average, and objects or sheets which have been strongly elongated with respect to the mean will have correspondingly a mixing time which is much smaller, so that there is a one-to-one correspondence between the PDF of elongation and the PDF of mixing time. The PDF of mixing time is exponential, like people from here had described also before along similar lines. And then to close the problem completely, and since there is at a given instant of time a one-to-one relationship between the concentration level and the current time, it is easy to infer the probability density function of the concentration for any time. So this complicated formula simply results in a series of change of variables, as you have seen. There is just a distribution of histories, and the distribution of histories induces a distribution of concentration. So this is exactly what can be measured in the experiments I have just shown. So in red, this is the complicated formula before, and in black, this is the concentration. So that would be typically the what we would have if the plume in Japan were continuously released, and if the direction of the wind were continuous, we would have this kind of probability density function. So this is for different times, and of course, as time progresses, the probability to have a large concentration decays, and it decays in this fashion with a quasi-exponential behavior at intermediate concentration level, and then a sharp cutoff, which explains that the concentration is bounded.
So that I would look at this simulation, I wouldn't see that, right? This physics is not in that simulation.
No. But if it were, I mean, yeah, exactly. In some sense, since you have seen that we have understood this phenomenology by change of variables, distribution of mixing times, distribution of concentration resulting from distribution of mixing times, in some sense, this observable, the distribution of concentration, is a measure of the distribution of elongation at a given instant of time in the medium. It's another way of saying the same thing. All right.
How do you, it seems that there is a transition. So before you showed some laminar flow where some plume was spreading due to diffusion and deformed due to shear.
Yeah.
Now you show turbulent flow where this diffusion can be due to this flow and bringing together regions of two different concentrations and then very fast diffusion, right? So it seems that
So this is precisely the if I understand well your question, what the ingredient we will be discussing now. I have not described so much the experiment producing this plume, but you have maybe guessed from the picture I have shown that the plume was highly dispersing. It has been released from a source whose size is much smaller than the large scale integral scale of the flow. So that, you know, there is Richardson dispersion and stuff. So the elementary sheets you have seen are essentially alone and don't interact much with their neighbors. There is not much interaction. So that the final result, the PDF of concentration, is actually a measure of the individual trajectories seen by each particle in the medium. However, not all flows are like that, and this is what I am discussing now.
Okay, so basically, when you have a turbulent flow and there is turbulent mixing, it should have nothing to do with this laminar picture. Right? It should be different.
Oh, it has everything to do with it. There is a continuity of it has everything to do. Sure. I mean, I have not discussed a different physics when I was discussing the vortex than when I was discussing this turbulent plume. It's just a matter of distribution of stretching histories. But now we are looking at another ingredient.
I don't know how this individual diffusion can enter this picture, because individual diffusion shouldn't be important if you have double mixing, right? I mean,
it is.
This molecular diffusion, it's still.
Yeah, sure,
it's important, of course.
Of course.
No mixing is a good
thing. Right. But I mean, you can. I mean,
this would be just
independent of the molecular diffusion, right?
So I mean.
But it's independent in the sense that there is zero if it is zero, and if it's plus zero, it's non-zero.
But there is no way to alter the concentration distribution of a mixture in the absence of molecular diffusion. This is what what Grischer just said. So diffusion is always there. All right, but so we were right now discussing mixtures where essentially these objects, this stretch sheet, can be considered as individual objects which do not see each other much. But you can ask the question, if now, for instance, you're interested into chemical reactions or things like that, if I have the same experiment as previously, so one plume emanating from one source in a stirring field, and you have another one next to it, if I know the composition of the medium produced by this one, and if I know the composition produced by that other one, what will be the composition of the medium if I have the two sources operating at the same time? Another way of posing nearly the same question is to say, okay, up to now I was a kind of a Daltonian person, making no difference between green and red, but in fact that plume was composed of two different streams of two different colors, like it's shown here. And I would like to know what is the contribution of the green and of the red to the overall ensemble we have just described now. In other words, what are the contributions of the elementary sources composing an initial source? So this is now another kind of questions we are asking, and this makes reference to the composition rule, so the second ingredient I was talking about before. So yeah, in the experiment in the left here, you have, let's say, source one here, source two there. So let's operate source one, and you have a certain concentration distribution, and then stop it, and they operate source two, you have another concentration distribution. The two sources are alike, so that the two distributions are nearly identical. But now we're operating source one plus source two, so two at the same time. And we have another distribution. And the symbols here represent the operation, the result of the operation applied to the first PDF coming from source one, the second PDF coming from source two, to understand the overall PDF when source one and source two is operating. And what is this operation? What is this composition rule? Well, it's simply the independence, the statistical independence of the levels arising or coming from source one and from source two to make the concentration level C in the overall mixture. So this is simply the convolution of the distribution by the other, provided the C1 plus C2 equals C. So this defines the convolution. So this shows that essentially the concentration level emanating from each of the sources are independent to each other. So the microscopic interaction in that case, and this occurs for real. I mean, you can, if you put a high-speed camera in the medium, for instance, you can see these sheets, which are approaching each other and which are melting in each other in some sense, interdiffusing. I remind you that the Fourier equations are linear. So, if C1 obeys the Fourier equation, if C2 obeys the Fourier equation, then C1 plus C2 obeys the same Fourier equation. So the two concentration profiles in space add indeed. So this is the appropriate microscopic operation. Then the convolution, we have described it, and it results indeed from the folding of these sheets, or the fact that the two sources overlap in space. So a way to describe this is to go into Laplace transform. There is a machinery that I will not describe too much to understand the resulting distributions, but I would like to stress that this kind of phenomena, the interaction between the sheets, applies obviously for mixtures whose, for instance, whose average concentration is conserved. That was not the case of the plume, which was continuously diluting into the stirring medium. Previously, the average concentration was continuously decreasing because it was continuously diluting. But now, if you do the same thing into a confined channel, for instance, if you inject some stream into a diluting stream, so that the flow carried by the two streams remains constant. In a channel, for instance, the average concentration of the mixture will be conserved so that these interactions will be enforced and will occur most of the time. And this applies for turbulent systems as well as for laminar systems. It's, I mean, if you're stirring like that in a random fashion, you do exactly the same thing. You enforce the interaction of the lamella or of the sheets with each other. So yes, the key word here is aggregation. So there are not only the protoplanets which aggregate, the lamella also aggregate in a turbulent medium. This is also described by a Smolkovsky-like kind of description. And the resulting probability density function, when this interaction mechanism operates extremely frequently, will be such that the probability density function will be stable by self-convolution, because the mechanism which builds it is precisely a mechanism of convolution. So we could describe this at length. This is quite interesting. So the mechanism which builds the concentration distribution is the addition of concentration. However, the underlying stretching motions contribute to the decay of the individual concentration in the sheets. This is what we have seen before. So that the overall kinetic equation describing the rate of change of the composition of the medium is composed of two terms. One term, which is the self-convolution term, and another term, which is simply the Liouville term, accounting for the global decay of the concentration level. And the stable distributions corresponding to this process are gamma distributions, which are parametrized by a unique factor, this n, and n is related to, as we will see, yes, n is related to the growth of material lines in the medium. N is, if you wish, the number of elementary sheets you need, of stretch sheets you need to accumulate at one point in order to restore the average concentration which is conserved. So the effect of the motions, the underlying motion, is to decay the concentration levels, as we have seen. However, in a mixture where on the average the concentration is conserved, these sheets have to agglomerate, have to add locally. This is the reason for the shape of the distribution. And the number of sheets in the mean which have aggregated is such that the average concentration is conserved. The temporal dependence of the concentration in one sheet is this T squared plus 1/2. You remember the construction in 3D. So that the number of sheets one has to consider at a given instant of time is proportional to T to the 5/2, and this is indeed what is seen in the experiment. So you see that when this random addition mechanism is operating, the concentration distribution is quite different from the one we had in the freely dispersing case. In some sense, this addition mechanism screens the individual trajectories mechanism. And of course, the fate of the medium, this gamma distribution, will become narrower and narrower around the average. The fate of the medium is to be at a unique average concentration in the well-mixed limit. All right, so that was the second. And of course, these kind of things does not depend if the medium is strongly turbulent or not. You can do it at Reynolds number 0.1. So that was the protocol I was showing before. You just stir with a rod a black ink into a diluting medium. In that case, the material lines increase proportionally to time. And you recover these distributions, which now, this parameter n, since we are in two dimension, increases as a function of the number of cycles or the function of time, like the power 3 halves, because we have only one direction of elongation and not two, like in the 3D case. All right, it works even better if you are stirring a little bit with turbulence. So exactly the same protocol. If you're looking at the concentration distribution at a given instant of time, this is this gamma fit, which is better in the case where this would be typically the Reynolds number you have when you stir a drop of milk into coffee. So this is typically 50, and it works better because you have these turbulent eddies which help you as compared to the strongly laminar case. Okay. This kind of experiment with the blobs allows also to investigate the problem of the possible correlations in the medium. As I have said before, we were considering a unique blob into a diluting medium. But now we are decomposing this blob into two different colors and ask what is the contribution of each of the color to the final pattern. And we have seen that, at least in the experiments I have shown up to now, the appropriate composition rule is of a statistical independence type. In other words, at a given instant of at a given position in the medium, the amount of red and the amount of green, since we are working with red and green, is a random variable. So that the concentration add in a completely independent fashion in the intermingled set realized by the stirring. And indeed, this is what happens since we have two colors and since we are rich enough to have a color camera in the lab. We can measure the PDF of concentration of the green, of the red, and then of the overall mixture form of the red plus green, as if we were not able to distinguish between the two colors. And the appropriate operation to apply to the PDF of red and PDF of green to restore the overall concentration, the overall PDF, is this convolution operation I was describing before. It works even better in turbulence, because if you do now the same thing in a confined channel with two types of dye, so fluorescein and rhodamine, for those who do experiments, you measure independently the red, the green, and you ask, how do I have to compose the red plus the green to have the overall mixture? This is the convolution rule, which works. However, we all know that there are correlations in flows and in turbulence. And this is something which is, in fact, very sensitive to the initial conditions. Because if we consider a slightly different initial condition compared to the one I was showing before, we had two blobs side by side. Now we consider this annular representation. Then it would seem that the system evolves in a similar way. However, now the appropriate operation to go from the red and green to the overall field is no more of a set of a convolution type. It is of a type which assumes or which reflects the complete correlation between the two fields. And indeed, so in that case, if you write that the two fields are strongly correlated, so let me show you what, voila. The regions of low concentration in the red field correspond to regions of low concentration in the blue field. and or green field, and vice versa, the high concentrations correspond to the high concentration in the two colors. In other words, by changing slightly the initial condition, we have moved from a complete independence to a complete correlation between the two fields, which remain correlated quite long. And in that case, the appropriate operation, if you write that, is that the inverse of the distributions add, and this is no more a self-convolution. And this
joint PDFs.
Excuse me.
Have you tried to make a joint PDFs?
Yes.
Your data are good enough that you can get reliable joint PDFs.
This is what we are seeing in the turbulence case, for instance. I was showing the. And the joint PDF shows that is that the low concentration levels are correlated to the low concentration levels, and the high concentration levels are correlated to the high concentration. In that case, so these two color experiments allow to address the problem of correlations. So let me to finish, because I'm quite late in the program, but let me to finish address one consequence of this. Construction mechanism of mixtures resulting from the aggregation of elementary objects. This is the characteristic scales we have in the medium. So it's always interesting to invent a new characteristic scale. We were talking about that a few days ago. So the equilibrium scales we are used to in turbulence, there is at least one in the context of passive scalar, the Batchelor scale, which again simply results from the fact that the medium is stretching material lines. There is a compression rate, and when the compression rate is equilibrated by diffusive broadening, then you have a characteristic scale. Now, if this equilibrium happens in a regions of the flow where the differences of velocity is proportional to the distance between the points where the difference is taken. This is a kind of a smooth, this is the case of what so-called smooth flows. The characteristic scale which arises is the Batchelor scale. And now if this equilibrium happens in the regions of the flow where the scaling is different, rough flows, we have the Corsino-Bukow-Slank scale. But this is, again, a construction mechanism of the scales which results from a local equilibrium. And this is commonplace in physics in general. If the restoring mechanism is not the diffusion at small scale, but it is, for instance, capillary forces, we can do exactly the same kind of construction to understand, for instance, the size of droplets of oil, which would be dispersed into a stirred medium of water. So you stir, and the question you ask is, what is the size of the droplets? The local equilibrium will tell you that you have to match the stresses, those arising from the Laplace equation, so for Laplace stresses, and those arising from the inertia, giving rise to a length scale which was first discovered by Kolmogorov himself, 1949. And then independently by Hinze, it works, and this explains the characteristic size of these small oil droplets. But as we have seen, there are collective effects in stirred mixtures, and you cannot only rely on this local equilibrium. You have to take into account the fact that the sheets see each other and that they are compressed by the large scale motion of the flow. And this you can do that by looking at the mixture, degrading the resolution of the mixture in order to see how the statistics changes. So this is, for instance, the original mixture obtained in an experiment. Then we degrade the resolution and we recompute everything, the spectrum, the variance of the flow and the variance of the concentration pattern, etc. And we look at the variance of the concentration field, for instance, as a function of this coarsening scale R that we have. And of course, what we see is that the variance is constant up to a time where, up to a scale where the concentrations are smoothed by this smoothing procedure precisely, down to zero. And at the inflection point, for instance, we can define a scale, which is precisely what we call the coarsening scale. So this is an artificial procedure which tells you what is the characteristic size in the medium, which bears the information variance, so which bears essentially the big fluctuations in the flow, and you can compute this. So it arises from precisely the interaction mechanism I was describing, these elementary sheets which are aggregated to each other by the large scale motion, so that the construction mechanism of this object, of this scale, is to consider a bundle, not only as objects which are isolated, but a bundle of these objects which are nearby and close to each other, and which are compressed so that the big fluctuations in the flow are made at precisely the scale we are looking for. And that scale relates not to the smaller scale present in the flow, but paradoxically to the larger scale present in the flow, precisely because they result from a collective melting mechanism. I've nearly finished. So that's the scale which arises, and which indeed is proportional to the integral scale of the flow, and not to something which is very small. And of course, it depends on the Prandtl or Schmidt number, which is the ingredient which measures the intensity of the diffusion. All right. Yes, we have argued that this scale is the one which was setting the width of the so-called plateaus in shear flows, which you all know that the concentration field in a mixing layer, for instance, shows wide regions of nearly zero concentration gradient.
They really scale with Schmidt this way?
Yeah. And these broad regions are separated by sharp cliffs, and sharp cliffs are precisely at the bachelor scale, but in between, all these fine structures have merged with each other to form much bigger scales. All right, yeah, this is the scale of scrutiny that P.V. Dankwartz used to call. All right, I'm going to stop here because there was probably too many things. That's just to mention that once you have understood this, you can easily devise a numerical technique like the one these guys from Belgium could have been using. You just compute the evolution, for instance, of a line by the kinematics of the flow. And since you know exactly how to plug in molecular diffusion on your line according to its local rate of stretch, you can reconstruct completely the concentration field at any time, since the kinematics gives you the rate of stretching of all the elements along the line. You know exactly what will be the concentration level at any point along the line. So it's very easy to advect a line, change a posteriori the Pechlin number, because you exactly know, according to the construction I was showing, how the concentration level will depend on the Pechlin number, and then play many games, including the one consisting in deciphering how these elementary sheets are talking to each other, how they agglomerate, and how the concentration distribution you record along the line will contribute to the overall concentration distribution when the sheets have merged. I mean, it's an interesting game to understand how a complex mixture has been built. All right.
So coming back to these simulations, you know, from the stuff coming from Japan, I mean, wouldn't you have to then replace your Pechlin number with some kind of turbulence?
Sure.
Parameterized?
Sure. In order to represent the small scale activity of the flow, they probably need that.
So how does in your, you know, if I have these two terms and then the further part, then at some scale I get in what, you know, I get in the Richardson regime or in the bachelor regime of turbulent dispersion. which comes into then into this problem, because, you know, this blob over here and the blob are separated, so the scales coming out. Does this show up in here?
What? Show
that. Well, that the separate, that the two points that came from a distance r will move apart, like t squared, for example. You know, the velocity, the distance squared goes like.
You mean in their simulation?
Where Richard's
in their simulation? I don't know.
No, in your story.
Sure.
Right now, that's not in there. Is it in there? It's in there, right? Isn't it? I mean,
there are two things. There is the kinematics. Okay, that is the kinematics, and you are referring to a particular steering protocol which would involve a T square or a T cube or anything. And then what I have been discussing is how you plug diffusion on that in order to restore or to understand the concentration distribution.
Right. So if you have
now, if I take a set of particles, yes, defining a contour, which evolves according to a Richardson law, no problem.
And then you just put this in.
Exactly.
But you have all the folding in it too.
Yeah. So.
But it's not in the Richardson law, right?
No, it's not in the precise. I know how much folding will occur. I know how much the folding will influence the composition of the medium through the interaction.
That's what you know from.
Exactly.
But that is not very well known for turbulent flow, right?
No.
It's interesting.
Okay, thanks for the video. We'll make a short break.